Well, good morning once again, everyone. Today we're going to be continuing on with the topic that we discussed yesterday. We're talking about the love of God and the love of Jesus. Today we're going to look more into the relationship of the love between God the Father and His Son, and then between the Son and the Father with us and us with them. And we will see that the relationship is an incredible one, an awe-inspiring one, where God says we are His friends and we are His children. Now, I know about having God as our friend. In fact, one of the great American founding fathers, Benjamin Franklin, at the Constitutional Convention, when he gave up and gave that memorial speech about when he called upon our asking that great friend of ours, do we not think that we still need His help? Of course, he was referring to God. And we sing songs like, what a friend we have in Jesus. And this is true. He is our friend, but He's more than our friend. And yet God says we are His friends. So for me to have God as my friend is one thing, but for Him to say to me and to all of you that we are His friends, that says a lot, an awful lot. So let's start out. We'll go to John, the 15th chapter, the Apostle John. He's the apostle who wrote a lot about love. He was the apostle who leaned on Jesus' breast during the final moments of the Last Supper. He was beloved of Jesus. He was very special. And he wrote and said some amazing things. John chapter 15 and verse 9. This is what he said. As the Father has loved me, I also have loved you. Live in my love. Now let's get this straight. He says, the Father loved me. And as much as He loved me and still does, I love you. That's almost mind-boggling when you stop to think about it. To further expand on it, let's go a page or two over to chapter 17. In the 17th chapter of John, we really have what is known as the Lord's Prayer. This is the prayer that He uttered to His Father at that final Passover celebration. And we will pick it up in verse 20, and we will read seven remarkable verses. Beginning in verse 20, I do not pray for these only. That is, He's talking to His Father. He's not praying only for the disciples who are there with Him, but for all of us. But also for those who shall believe in me through their word, and it's come down to us, that they all may be one, even as you, Father, are in me, and I in you. So Jesus is saying He wants all of us to be at one with each other in mind, spirit, understanding, devotion, that they also may be one in us in order that the world may believe that you sent me. And I have given them the glory that you gave to me. Now let that one sink in. Here is Jesus saying, you gave me glory. And that same glory is now given to them and to us on down. Of course, we're not going to get the full measure of it until the resurrection and the kingdom. But nevertheless, He says, I gave them the glory that you gave to me in order that they may be one in the same way that we are one. But we can understand how the Father and the Christ are one. And we're supposed to be one with each other in the same way, the same love, the same spirit. I in them, you in me, that they may be perfected into one, and that the world may know that you did send me and have loved them as you have loved me. Now, did we all catch that one? Jesus is saying that the Father loves us no less than He loved His only begotten Son. Now that ought to be humbling and inspiring. Father, I desire that these whom you have given me may also be with me where I am, so that they may behold my glory which you have given me, because you did love me before the foundation of the world. Righteous Father, the world has not known you, but I have known you, and these have known that you did send me, and I have made known your name to them, and will make it known, so that the love with which you loved me may be in them, and I in them. We're talking about an incredible family relationship here. I wonder if we really deeply understand what that means. Well, now, let's go back to John 15 again. We were there a few minutes ago, and now we'll be back to John 15. We read in verse 9, as the Father loved me, I also loved you, but drop down to verse 12. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, that one lay down his life for his friends. And here is what I was talking about earlier, what Jesus says. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. No longer do I call you servants, because the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, because I have made known to you all the things that I have heard from my Father. That's remarkable. Now, to show what Jesus did about laying down his life, one scripture I could have used yesterday but did not, but let's use it now. Let's turn to the Philippians. The epistle to the Philippians by the Apostle Paul. Because Jesus said that greater love hath no man than he lay down his life for his friends. And as we go to Philippians, the second chapter, and we're going to pick this up beginning in verse 5. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 5. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who although he existed in the form of God, now remember something, when it says he existed in the form of God, that's another way of saying he was and is God. You don't exist in the form of God without being God, which of course is what the Jewish leaders were just furious about. They said, you make yourself equal with God. And he was. Because indeed, he was equal with God. I didn't like that. Oh, they didn't like that. I know, there's but one God, one being. They did not understand. Well, coming down here, although he existed in the form of God, did not consider it robbery to be equal with God. But, key verse 7, but emptied himself, was made in the likeness of men, took the form of a servant, and being found in the manner of man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. For us, greater love hath no man than he laid down his life for his neighbors. Jesus did that. Well, how do we do that? Does God want us to die for each other? Well, maybe once in a great while that might have to happen, but generally not. So let's look at some examples of what it means to lay down your life for each other or to do for each other. We're going to look at one of the classic ones. Now, we can't do this to the extent that this man did it because of different day and age, and there are legal considerations. But you've all heard of the Good Samaritan? Let's take a look at that Good Samaritan. That's in the Gospel of Luke. Luke chapter 10. Now, we're all familiar with it. But it's always good to read it again. A remarkable story. A remarkable parable. Luke chapter 10. And we'll pick it up in verse 25. Now a certain doctor of the law suddenly stood up tempting him, meaning tempting Christ, and saying, Master, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And he said to him, What is written in the law? How do you read it? Then he answered and said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, at least this is what the doctor answered. And he said to him, Jesus did, you have answered correctly. Do this, and you shall live. But he, desiring to justify him, said to Jesus, and who is my neighbor? Oh, yes, who is my neighbor? And taking it up, Jesus said, a certain man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and was encircled by thieves. And after they had stripped him of his goods and inflicted him with wounds, they went away, leaving him half dead. Now, by coincidence, a certain priest went down that road. And when he saw him, he passed by on the opposite side. Oh, I'm not going to get involved with this Gentile, with this Samaritan, a priest of God, one who is to represent God. But that was his attitude. And in like manner, a Levite, when he was at the place, came and saw him and passed by on the opposite side. Same approach, same attitude. But a certain Samaritan, oh, one of those low-life, despised Samaritans, you know, from Mount Gerizim, the pagan temple, a Samaritan, as he was journeying, came to him. And when he saw him, he was moved with compassion. And he went to him, bound up his wounds, poured on oil and wine, put him on his own beast, brought him to an inn, took care of him. And when he left on the next day, he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper and said to him, take care of him, and whatever you may expend above this, I will repay you when I come back. Therefore, which of these three seems to you to have been a neighbor of him who fell among thieves? And he said, that is, the doctor of the law responded, the one who showed compassion toward him. Then Jesus said to him, you go and do likewise. Now, we can't do exactly as this Good Samaritan did, because if you did find somebody lying in the street or was beaten, and if those guys were still around, they could do harm to you. But you can call 911, maybe. And if you came upon a person and was injured and lying in the street, you better be careful. Because if you move him in any way, or you try to help him, and he becomes worse, you get slapped with a lawsuit. So we're not exactly the same, in the same capacity of this Samaritan. Now, remember what he did, and let's see what Jesus said to us in Matthew 25, and compare the two. And one simply exemplifies the other. Matthew, the 25th chapter. Matthew chapter 25 and verse 31. Now when the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And he shall gather before him all the nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on his left. Then shall the king say to those at his right hand, come you, who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. That part we read yesterday, but the next few verses we did not. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and fed you, or thirsty and gave you a drink? And when did we see you a stranger and took you in, or naked and clothed you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and came to you? Then answering, the king shall say to them, truly I say to you, inasmuch as you have done it to one of these least of these my brethren, you have done it to me. Now, that's what we can do. It means taking time to help each other. If someone is sick, maybe visit him. If he's in the hospital or she's in the hospital, pay a little visit. say, hi, how are you? Is there anything we can do for you? You know, little consolation. Someone just got through maybe giving birth to a child, can't quite get up and down, maybe cook a meal and bring it to her. Maybe for some people, shun is maybe mow the lawn once or twice for them. All these things that we can give, that's what Jesus meant when he said laying down your life. It doesn't mean literally dying or being martyred, but it means giving of your time and your effort to help. This is what he was referring to. Now give this some thought. What if God had seen us in our state, full of sin, vanity, jealousy, lust, and greed? Now he saw that once in the days of Noah. What if he had said again, I've had it with mankind. It's it. Enough. They have blown it. They've rebelled against me. They went, even killed my own son, whatever it is. Forget it. Let them die. If God had done that, if he had said that, would he have been righteous? Would he have been justified in saying it? The answer is yes. Remember the penalty? Mayor LaGuardia paid that $10 fine. Somebody had to pay it. Well, someone had to pay the penalty for sin, and God would have been fully justified if he had let all of us die to pay that penalty. But he didn't. He so loved us. So he did decide to die. And let's see it specifically. Romans chapter 5. The Apostle Paul. Oh, Romans is an incredible epistle. If you ever want to get a feel for the doctrines of the church and the beliefs of the church that way, in an organized manner, read Romans, the entire chapter of Romans. It is magnificent. It is well ordered, well organized. But in this case, Romans chapter 5, verses 5 to 10. Romans 5, chapter 5. And the hope of God never makes us ashamed, because the love of God has been poured out into our hearts through the Holy Spirit, which has been given to us. For even when we were without strength, at the appointed time, Christ died for the ungodly. For rarely will anyone die for a righteous man, although perhaps might have the courage to die for a good man. But God commends his love, his own love, to us, because when we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So he did. And now he calls us, remember, he calls us friends. Well, you know, somebody else was a friend of God. God called him his friend. Does anybody remember who that was? Abraham. You bet. Oh, Moses too. But in this particular case, Abraham. Turn over to Isaiah, the 41st chapter. Isaiah. Someone had mentioned Moses. Yes, Moses. God spoke to Moses face to face. But in particular, I want to look at Abraham. We're just going to very, very briefly look at chapter 41. And we're going to pick up one verse. And then we're going to see an interplay between Abraham and God, how they spoke to each other respectfully. God and Abraham, almost face to face. And we will see what a master diplomat Abraham was. Verse 8, Isaiah 41. But you, Israel, are my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend. Now that is quite a title to have, the friend of God. So let's see one of the reasons why Abraham was a friend of God and how he acted. Chapter 18 of the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 18. This, if you will recall, was the time that God came down. He's going to check out Sodom and Gomorrah, and he promises Sarah and Abraham about having a son. Well, we're picking up this story in Genesis chapter 18, verse 16. And the men arose up from there and looked toward Sodom. These are the angels, the two angels that accompanied God. And Abraham was going with them, to send them on the way. And the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham the thing which I do? Since Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him, for I know him. Not only does God say, Abraham is my friend, he says, I know him. And one of the reasons that he will command his children and his house after him, and they will keep the way of the Lord to do justice, judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him. And one of the reasons, we won't turn there, but in Genesis 26, verses 4 and 5, God says of Abraham, he kept my laws, my statutes, my commandments, he obeyed my voice. That's why Abraham was a friend of God. And the Lord said in verse 20, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done according to the cry of it, which has come to me, and if not, I will know. And the men turned their faces away from there and went towards Sodom. But Abraham still stood before the Lord, that is alongside of him. And Abraham drew near and said, now mind you, he is talking to the God of heaven and earth in human form. And Abraham knows he's talking to that being. Yet read his words. Will you also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Perhaps there are 50 righteous within the city. Will you also destroy and not spare the place for the 50 righteous who are in it? Far be it from you to act in this manner, to kill the righteous with the wicked, and far be it from you that the righteous should be as the wicked. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? What is Abraham doing? Chiding the God of heaven? Well, remember, Abraham and God were like this. They were friends. And God respected Abraham. So what did he say? He didn't take umbrage. He didn't take offense. This is friend to friend. And the Lord said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will not spare all the place for their sakes. Then I will spare all the place for their sakes. Abraham isn't through yet. And Abraham answered and said, behold now, I have taken it upon myself to speak to the Lord. See, he knew who he was talking to. I who am but dust and ashes. Again, talk about tact and diplomacy. Abraham is truly the master diplomat. He really was. If you were a king and you wanted somebody to represent you before another king, another empire, believe me, Abraham would be your man. He really would. Perhaps there will be 5 lacking from the 50 righteous. Will you destroy all the city for the lack of 5? And he said, if I find there 45, I will not destroy it. Oh, that Abraham, he's still at it. And he spoke to him yet again and said, perhaps there be 40 found there. And he said, I will not do it for 40's sake. Here he goes again. And he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. Perhaps there shall be 30 found there. And he said, I will not do it if I find 30 there. Does Abraham know when to stop? Apparently not. And he said, lo now, I have taken it upon myself to speak to the Lord. Perhaps there shall be 20 found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 20's sake. And finally, oh, do not let the Lord be angry, and I will speak only once more. Perhaps only 10 shall be found there. And he said, I will not destroy it for 10's sake. You talk about driving a bargain here. Abraham was magnificent. He really was. And God was gracious because Abraham was his friend. God wasn't going to diss him. God wasn't going to put him down. God doesn't do that. And the Lord went his way as soon as he had left talking off with Abraham. And Abraham returned to his place. And then I, in my own somewhat, what shall I say, perverted or twisted way, look at this and sometimes think to myself, I wonder if God was thinking to himself, I am getting out of here before Abraham talks me out of the whole thing. I don't know. Now, maybe not. Okay, maybe not. Maybe that's just my my imagination running away with me. Okay. Well, we know the story. Couldn't find 10. Couldn't find 5. 4 theoretically, but in reality, maybe only 3. Lot and his 2 daughters. For unfortunately, his wife wasn't much of a prize. She turned back. She looked back. And she understands something. In the Hebrew, when it talks about look back, it doesn't mean she turned and say, oh yeah, I see. Oh man, I gotta get out of here. Oh no, no, no. The Hebrew implies, I really don't want to leave. I really want to go back. Is there any way I can go back? That's what is implied. God didn't turn her into a pillar of salt just because she was running. He wasn't going to be, what shall we say, is like the truly great baseball player. The African-American player, Satchel Paige, was an incredible, if you ever had a chance to see him play. Wow. He was incredible. And they say no one knows how old he was because the records were destroyed when he was born, you know, in the whole hospital. Some say he was 34, 44, but he was still pitching, throwing strikes. And he was famous for saying, don't look back. You might find something gaining on you. So if he had just, if Lot had just been running away, taking a quick look back and then kept going, no, God would never have done that. She really didn't want to leave this world. She didn't want to leave Sodom. That's why she was turned into a pillar of salt. See, sometimes we have to understand the background of why God does certain things. You might say, well, God's just haphazard. He's just arbitrary. No, our God is never arbitrary. Well, Jesus called us his friends. But you know, we are more than friends. Turn over to 1 John. Here we are talking about John again. In this case, not the Gospel of John, but the Epistle of John. But you know, right after the book of Acts, we have the general epistles, Peter, James, and John. And John makes a marvelous statement here, an inspiring one. 1 John chapter 3, verse 1. Behold, what glorious love the Father has given to us, that we should be called the children of God. For this very reason, the world does not know us, because it does not know him. Behold, now we are the children of God, and it has not yet been revealed what we shall be. But we know that when he is manifested, we shall be like him, because we shall see him exactly as he is. So John says, look at this glorious love. God is our Father. He has begotten us. We're his children. Not just friends. Family. You know, it's oddly enough, one of the most effective forms of government on this earth, and I hate to say it, okay, because it bothers me every time I say it, but it is that of an institution, an organization known as Cosa Nostra, the Mafia. And why is the Mafia perhaps the most effective form of government on this earth as such? It's family. It truly is family. There's the Don sitting, talking, explaining maybe what he wants done, and sometimes there are some of the younger ones coming up and say, this is crazy! This is stupid! Practically get up and shouts almost in the Don's face. And the Don just sits there, listening patiently. Why? Because the Don knows their family. And the Don knows that when he finally makes his decision, these young bucks, so to speak, Turks, what do you want to call them, these roustabouts, they will obey him. They will follow his instructions. But in order for the family to function properly, he has to let them blow off steam. And he does. And finally, when he says, I hear you. Yes, you have some valid points, But this is our overall objective, and this is how it must be. This is my decision. They bow, go back, and they all work together because it's family. That's why family is the most important, the most effective form of government in existence. And we're all going to be part of the family. And in that kingdom, if we have an idea or two, we may go directly to Christ, we may go to the Father, whatever it is, we're all going to be there, and he'll listen. He may say yes, he may say no. If you'll remember, we won't turn to it, but the Lord is pictured by the prophet Micaiah of having a council on heaven, trying to get Ahab to go up so he can fall at Ramoth Gilead in this war, because God had it with Ahab. He said, who shall do this? How are we going to do this? Who will do it? God was asking for suggestions. And one guy finally comes up, one angel, actually probably a demon, because after all, Satan does have access to his court, said, I'll be a lying spirit in his mouth. And what does God say? Good. Go do it. It was done. It's family. That's the point. We are family. Now, we're going to be like him. We're going to see him as he is. Yes. Well, how is he? What does he look like? Let's rehearse it again. First chapter of the book of Revelation. Revelation, chapter 1, the last book in the Bible. And we have a description of Jesus of Nazareth, glorified. Revelation, chapter 1, and we will pick it up in verse 10. I was in the Spirit on the day of the Lord, and I heard a loud voice like a trumpet behind me, saying, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, and what you see, write in a book, and send it to the churches that are in Asia, to Ephesus, to Smyrna, to Pergamos, to Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea. And I turned to see the voice that spoke with me. And when I turned, I saw seven gold lampstands. And in the midst of the seven lampstands, one like the Son of Man, clothed in a garment reaching to the feet, and girded with the chest with a golden breastplate. And his head and hair were like white wool, white as snow, and his eyes were like a flame of fire, and his feet were like fine brass, as if they glowed in a furnace, and his voice was like the sound of many waters. That's what we are going to be like. And to further show that, let us turn to the prophet Daniel. Daniel, the prophet. In the third book, in the first section of the Bible, not in the prophet section, but Daniel has something very similar to that. Daniel chapter 12. The Daniel, the man who truly was beloved of God, a remarkable individual. We don't have time to study a lot about Daniel, but we're going to go to the 12th chapter. Daniel chapter 12, and pick it up in verses 2 and 3. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. But in Daniel 12 and verse 3, and they who are wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they shall turn many to righteousness, and shall shine as the stars forever and ever. That's what we will do. In fact, the Apostle Paul said, in essence, whatever Jesus the Christ inherited from his Father, we inherit the same. Nothing more, nothing less. And if that isn't awe-inspiring, I don't know what is. So let us close with this section from the book of Romans. Again, we go to Romans. In one of the most inspiring books in that of the entire Bible, it's about chapters. Romans chapter 8, a remarkable chapter. We won't read the entire chapter. We don't need to. But the point that I want to bring out begins in verse 16. Romans chapter 8, in verse 16. The Spirit itself bears witness conjointly with our own spirit testifying that we are the children of God. Now, if we are children, we are also heirs, truly heirs, heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer together with him, so that we may also be glorified with him. For I reckon that the sufferings of the present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. Now back there in verse 17, we are heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. And that Greek word, I checked it out with Fred to make sure I know what I was talking about. And he said, yes, it is zoom, it is joint, together, and means that we rise with him. As he is, so we shall be. That's his goal. That's what he wants for us. And it is his love for us that he will then use us to spread his joy, his love, his law, his way into all the universe. That is the relationship of God the Father to the Son to the Father, and both of them to us, and us with Christ. Now tomorrow, we will really begin in getting into the idea of love, like my neighbor as myself, love my neighbor as myself, what is all this, really some specifics. But this was part of the background. So, see you all tomorrow.